my country in Denmark knows that you are dividing people in two groups. One group is the people who lives or born in the Western countries, and those who are born in the non-Western countries. And almost the kids who are born in Denmark, they are in same category that their parents who are born in the non-Western countries. It's so terrible to think about. I couldn't imagine in my dream, because I am born in I lived in Denmark since I was seven. I couldn't imagine it in my dream at my country, Denmark, would make such kind of laws against a human being. It's more to see it's not a democracy. It's a more look like apartheid we have known from the South Africa.
Mohammed, so terrible to think about.
Mohammed, let me also ask you, how is this impacting you, your family, and your community in Mjolnir Park? And what kind of effect is that having?
Almost of all of us who is living in Mjolnir Park, we are wondering where we have to go or where we have to be settled, and kids have to move the schools like this. And the home we are living and have lived for the many, many decades, there's a lot of memories for ourselves as a family, our kids who are born and grow up here. So it's terrible to think about as someone wants to remove us from our homes because they don't want us to live there where we live because our color and our religion, and because they don't want to accept us as a Danish. It doesn't matter. We have lived here for a decade. So it's terrible to think about.
Fatima, how many neighborhoods have been designated as ghetto areas so far? And from your perspective, how is this impacting the residents of those neighborhoods? Because there are many critics of these laws that are saying that this is tearing immigrant communities apart.
So there are 15 neighborhoods that are affected by the so-called ghetto development plans. So in these neighborhoods, we see the development plans include demolition and forced evacuation of residents and the sale of some of the public housing in these neighborhoods.
And Fatima, you know, many rights groups are saying that that immigrant communities are being unfairly singled out and that these policies are racist. From your perspective, are these policies racist?
Yes, I believe they are. These policies are using racism and discrimination to attack public housing and to attack tenant rights. So the motivation behind them is to work for the interest of investors, of private investors who are gentrifying large cities in Denmark. But racism is a big part of these policies. And without the racist stigmatization of these neighborhoods, it would be impossible to get these laws passed in the parliament.
Mohammed, you know, the government, their perspective, they're saying that they aim to transform areas with high rates of crime and unemployment. And they also say that these measures, these new laws, will help to integrate foreigners. What's your response when you hear that?
First of all, it's not correct what they are saying, because the crime is not so high as they saying. In these areas, almost in whole Denmark, the crime is going down. So we can't see it. The arguments is fitting on us in this on our areas, on other areas in Denmark. So this is certainly not correct. The most of it we have seen for the last decade. It is before 6 months or 1 year before we are going to have a general election in Denmark. So is the competition between the parties and the politicians, then who can say the worst things against the foreigners, the immigrants, the Muslims? And those who can say the worst things, they get more seats in the parliament. And this is an issue going on for the decade now. So all those things they are saying, this is not correct.
Fatima, I saw you nodding along to some of what Mohammed was saying there. Did you want to jump in? Did you have a reaction to his remarks?
These laws, if they continue going without being stopped, they set a very dangerous precedence because this way you can take away any number of human rights, of basic rights in Danish society from certain groups by just using these criteria, for example, the non-Western criteria that has played a big part in passing this law. So this is very dangerous, and it worries me, and it creates a lot of fear and anxiety in immigrant and brown working class neighborhoods in Denmark.
Fatima, you know, the government is saying that the current tenants in these neighborhoods, that they are going to be offered alternative accommodation, but that there's not going to be any control over its location, quality or cost. That's what I understand from critics of the laws. What's going to happen to those who refuse to leave?
So in Danish law, you can contest an eviction and you can go to court. And this is what some of the residents are doing. They go to court to fight against this eviction, stating that this is a discriminatory law. Until now, we haven't had success in the Danish courts. So residents are taking this higher and higher up, hopefully going to the European Human Rights Commission.
Mohammed, you know, there's another aspect to this story right now. The fact that the Danish government decided to take in Ukrainian refugees fleeing the war in Ukraine, and that a majority of Denmark's parliament voted to amend these ghetto laws to make exceptions to exempt Ukrainians from these housing restrictions. What does that say to you? Because there are many critics that are saying that this proves that these housing laws are discriminatory. What do you say?
This is the one more proof to how the law is the lawmakers said making the law in Denmark. It depends on where you come from, which country, which part of the world, or which religion you have, or which color you have. This major proof on the laws that maybe which groups are you going to attack with your law. So I came with, it was myself in the conference, I came with this proposal that maybe they can think about this law once again, then we can still live in our homes in the future. But they really changed the proposal of the law. So this is a major proof. How the things is going on in Denmark these days and last decades.
Fatima, I want to ask you about this development too. I've read that residents in these areas that have been designated as ghettos, that they are, or some of them at least, are suing the Danish government for racial discrimination. From your perspective, how strong of a case do they have, especially considering this exemption to the ghetto laws that was made for Ukrainian refugees?
Yeah. So we've heard from experts in discrimination and Danish law saying that the residents have a very strong case. So we are very hopeful. However, the Danish courts don't have a good track record of challenging the parliament. So we're hoping for the best, but we think that we might have to take the case higher up in order to challenge these laws. Especially what we've seen with Ukrainian refugees and the way that politicians have talked about them and some of the exemptions that have been given to them. I think that it does strengthen the case because it shows very clearly that you get treated based on the color of your skin.
Fatima, also, this ghetto law, this was enacted by Denmark's previous right-wing government. Why do you think it's now being enforced by the center-left Social Democrats? Are they trying to appeal to right-wing voters? Are they trying to shore up support from voters they believe that they may lose to the right? Why is it happening?
Well, the Social Democratic Party hasn't been social democratic for a long time. And thus it has been losing popularity and using racism to appeal to to a part of the population has been a way that they've used to regain popularity, because they're incapable of fighting for the Danish welfare system and stopping the attacks from the right wing on the welfare system. So instead, they are using discrimination and racism and xenophobia to gain popularity and collect votes, basically.
Mohammed, from your perspective, how much more hostile has Denmark's policies toward refugees and asylum seekers and migrants become in recent years?
It's difficult to say, because we are going to have had an election very soon. So this competition I was talking about before, that I believe that will come again. And before, I have heard from a lot of families in Denmark and youngsters say, Denmark, this is our country. Here are we going to live, and our kids are going to grow up, and our generations are going to live here. But now I'm hearing from a lot of youngsters saying, and they're wondering if it will be safe for them to live, or their kids to grow up in Denmark, and their generation to live in safely in Denmark. So a lot of people are wondering. And now we have this, was our politician make this kind of law? What will be the next and the next again? So a lot of youngsters and a lot of families are afraid to think about or thinking maybe to move to another place and leave Denmark.
Fatima, let me ask you this. When it comes to these ghetto laws, what kind of criteria has to be met in order for somebody to be deemed of non-Western origin now?
So the criteria is that both parents originally come or are born in a non-Western country. So a person can be born in Denmark, have Danish citizenship, and still be categorized as so-called non-Western. So this shows that it is about ethnicity. It's not about citizenship. It's not even about culture or anything. It's about ethnicity.
And Fatima, let me ask you, do you know how much public support this ghetto law may have? I mean, from your perspective, from what you've seen there, do the majority of the population, do they support these actions, or is the opinion split?
I think it's difficult to tell what the public opinion about this matter is, because the media hasn't been talking about it, or it hasn't been informing the public about it properly. So when they talk about that they're fixing these areas, you see a lot of public support, because people think, well, there are problems and they're fixing it. But as soon as you mention that there is very good, cheap, nonprofit public housing being demolished and people being evicted from their homes, then you see that people are critical of these methods. So it's difficult to tell what's the public opinion is without a proper discussion and information about the issue.
Mohammed, I know you mentioned a little bit of this earlier, but I just want to ask again in a different way. You know, how worried are you right now about the future for you, for your family, for your children? What do you tell them when talking about all this?
Well, we have this kind of talk a lot of time, and I'm still telling my own kids and a lot of other youngsters that when we are living in Denmark, then we are Danish. Doesn't matter you have a Danish nationality or like this. And this is our country. Here we have to live, and here we have to work for the best of the country here. But still, when this kind of laws are coming and when we are hearing the politician, then really it's attack our hearts, and they are trying to push us away, say, you are not a part of the society, you are not a part of this country. So it really attack our hearts when we all the time is listening, reading, or seeing all this happening all the time. So there, I think they're right. A lot of youngsters, a lot of families are wondering if it is will be possible safely for them to live here or for their kids and the coming generations. So it could be, it can be difficult for Denmark as a country to have a people from outside in the future to come to Denmark if we are still having this kind of racist laws in Denmark.
Fatima, in these laws that were passed, there is also a requirement that children from the age of one have to spend at least 25 hours a week in childcare in order to receive mandatory training in quote-unquote Danish values. Do we know how many children are undergoing this, and also what kind of an impact is it having on them? I mean, is this having a traumatizing effect on the children?
Actually, we don't know how many children are being subjected to this. We don't have any numbers on this issue because nobody's collecting any numbers. This is the thing with the so-called ghetto laws. It's a big experiment, but nobody is collecting any data. Nobody is actually looking at what's happening with the people who are affected by these laws. And this is a big problem that people's that the government is intervening in people's lives without talking to them or looking at how this is affecting them.
Fatima, let me just ask you my last question here. I just want to talk for a moment about the term ghetto, because this is a term that has severely negative connotations. The fact that the word ghetto was used in crafting these laws, how much does that stigmatize residents in these neighborhoods?
Yeah. I mean, Denmark is the only country that we know of that uses the term ghetto officially in official documents and laws. So this is very problematic. And it's it signals to minorities here in Denmark which direction policies and politics in Denmark is going in. And the public discourse is generally, we see it very clearly, going into a direction that's very worrying, creating a lot of fear and anxiety among minorities here in Denmark. So the term is removed from the law now since the last election, but still the content of the law is the same, and the media still uses this word when talking about it. And the signal has already been sent out to people, which kind of treatment they can expect, which kind of stigmatization and discrimination they're going to face in this country based on their ethnicity.
All right. Well, we have run out of time, so we're going to have to leave the discussion there. Thanks so much to all of our guests, Mohammed Aslam and Fatima Tunsi. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. For me, Mohammed Jamjoum, and the whole team here in Doha, bye for now.